pull up a chair. I want to tell you about a man who flew the mail before there were lights on the ground to guide him, before there were radios worth a darn, before anybody had drawn a decent map of half the places he was expected to land. A man who crashed in the middle of the Sahara and nearly died of thirst, and turned that into one of the most beloved books ever written, and then, on a summer morning much like this one, climbed into a stripped-down fighter and flew off over the sea and was never seen alive again. This is Radio Hangar, I'm Taildragger, and this is the hangar where we keep the old stories warm. Today we talk about Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, the French called him Saint-Ex. He was a pilot first and a writer second, no matter what the bookshelves tell you, and his story sits right at that place where flying stops being a job and becomes something closer to a religion. Before we get into it, today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. Your first solo, your private, your instrument rating, all the way up the ladder. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it, and every one of them tells a story. That's the part I like, a coin in your pocket that says you were there, you did the thing. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Now, let me set the scene. It's the middle of the 1920s. The Great War is over, and there's a French outfit called Aéropostale, the airmail line, trying to do something nobody had really done before. They wanted to carry the mail from France, down across Spain, over the Sahara Desert, along the bulge of Africa, and eventually across the South Atlantic, to South America. Letters that used to take weeks by steamship, they wanted to deliver in days. Understand what that meant for the pilot in the seat. You flew an open cockpit airplane, something like a Breguet 14, a wood and fabric biplane left over from the war, with an engine up front that would quit on you for reasons no mechanic could always explain, no radio to speak of, no weather forecast worth the paper. You navigated by looking down at the ground, by a compass, by a watch, and by your own gut. And the ground below you out over the Sahara was not friendly. If your engine quit and you put it down in the desert, the people out there might ransom you back to the company, or they might not. Aéropostale kept a fund set aside just for buying pilots back. That was the world Saint-Exupéry flew into. He came from an old aristocratic family, minor nobility, not much money left. He'd failed his Naval Academy exam. He drifted a bit, and then he learned to fly, and something in him locked into place. In 1926, he signed on with the airmail line, and they sent him to the loneliest post they had. They made him the station chief at a place called Cape Juby, on the edge of the Sahara, on the coast of what's now Morocco, a little wooden shack next to a Spanish fort, out at the ragged end of the world. His job was to run the airfield, keep the fuel and the parts, and when a mail plane went down in the desert, to fly out and get the pilot. He learned the desert, he learned the tribesmen. He'd fly out alone, unarmed, and negotiate for a downed comrade. He got good at it. And here's where it gets interesting. Out there in that shack, with the wind coming off the dunes at night, and nothing but a lantern and paper, he started to write. His first book came out of that posting. He wasn't writing to be a writer. He was writing to make sense of what flying was doing to him. Because he'd figured out something that every one of us who has flown alone at night already knows in our bones. That when you get up there by yourself with the earth spread out below and the engine droning and the stars coming on, you start to see your own life differently. Flying wasn't an escape from the world for him. It was a way of finally seeing it clearly. Now let me tell you about the crash. Because this is the one everybody knows. Even if they don't know, they know it. It's 1935. Saint-Exupéry is older now, more famous, and he's chasing a prize. There was a race being offered, a big cash prize, for the fastest flight from Paris to Saigon, way out in French Indochina. He needed the money. He and his mechanic, a fellow named André Prévost, loaded up a little red monoplane, a Caudron Simoun, and set off across the Mediterranean and down into North Africa in the dead of night. Somewhere over the Sahara, over Libya, the weather closed in, clouds. No horizon, no lights on the ground. Saint-Ex thought he was higher than he was. He thought he was clear of the desert floor. He was flying along, fat and happy at what he believed was a safe altitude, and the truth was the ground was rising up underneath him in the dark. They hit at around 170 miles an hour, flat. A glancing blow across the top of a plateau, and by some miracle, instead of a fireball, the airplane skidded and broke apart and threw them clear, both of them alive, both of them barely scratched. The wreck was done, and they were somewhere in the Sahara, no radio, nobody knowing where they'd gone down, with almost no water, a thermos of coffee, a little wine, a few grapes and an orange, that was it, against the largest desert on Earth. They walked. In the daytime the heat cooked them, at night the cold set in. They started to see things. The mirages came, whole caravans that weren't there, lakes that weren't there. Their tongues swelled. Saint-Exupéry wrote later that he reached the point where he no longer had any spit, where he couldn't swallow, where the dryness had gone past thirst into something else. He wrote that he stopped sweating, and he knew what that meant, the body giving up its last water. 3 days. 4 days, by some counts. Walking and hallucinating, and lying down to die and getting up again. And then when they had truly reached the end of it, a Bedouin on a camel appeared over a dune, a real one this time. He gave them water, saved their lives, and that man never knew he'd rescued a fellow who would put him into a book read by tens of millions of people. Because that crash, that walk, that dying in the desert and coming back, that's the soil the little prince grew out of. When Saint-Exupéry wrote his most famous book years later, he opened it with an aviator crashed in the Sahara, 1,000 miles from any living soul, with barely a week's water. That was not invented, that was memory. The little prince who walks out of the dunes to talk to the stranded pilot, that whole gentle, strange, beautiful story. It starts at the exact spot where Saint-X nearly left his bones in the sand. Now folks, I've flown a long time, and I'll tell you, controlled flight into terrain. That's the sterile modern term for exactly what happened to him. Thinking you're higher than you are, in the dark, in the weather, with the ground coming up to meet you. It has killed better pilots than me, and it will kill pilots after I'm gone. The difference is Saint-Exupéry lived to write it down, and to warn the rest of us what it feels like from the inside. Let me take a breath here. The book came later, and here's a thing about it that always gets me. He wrote The Little Prince in 1942, in New York City of all places. France had fallen to the Germans. He was in exile, homesick, sick in his body from all the crashes, and he sat in an apartment in a city that wasn't his, and wrote this little tale about a pilot in the desert and a boy from a tiny planet. It came out in 1943, and it has since been translated into something like 500 languages and dialects. 500. There are people who have never heard the man was a pilot at all. They think he was a children's author. They've got it exactly backwards. He was a pilot who happened to write, and everything he wrote out of the cockpit. But he wasn't done flying, not by a long way. And this is the part that puts a lump in your throat. When the war came, Saint-Exupéry wanted back in the air. He was in his 40s now. His body was a wreck. All those crashes had left him with a shoulder that wouldn't work right, so he couldn't even turn around in the cockpit to check his six. He was too old by the rules, too broken. He pulled every string he had. He pestered generals, he called in every favor. And finally, they let him into a French reconnaissance squadron flying with the Americans. Out of the island of Corsica in the Mediterranean. And what were they flying? They put him in a P-38 Lightning. Now that's a serious airplane. Two engines, twin booms, the fastest thing going. The recon version was called the F-5, stripped of its guns, cameras in the nose, and sent up high and alone and unarmed to photograph what the enemy was doing. You flew way up in the thin, cold air, no guns to defend yourself, trusting altitude and speed to keep you alive. Picture this middle-aged man, this famous writer, this fellow who could barely climb the ladder into the cockpit, folding himself into the most modern fighter of the age. He struggled with it. It was a young man's machine, the oxygen system, the turbochargers, the sheer speed of it. He was known to get lost in his own thoughts up there. There are stories of him reading a book in the cockpit. He bent one on landing at least once. His commanders worried about him, but he flew his missions on the morning of July 31, 1944. Antoine de Saint-Exupéry took off from a field on Corsica in his P-38, alone on a reconnaissance run up over occupied France, to photograph the ground ahead of the coming Allied advance. It was a clear summer morning. 72 years ago this very week, near enough, he never came back. He simply did not return. No wreck, no word, no parachute, nothing. A pilot took off into a bright sky, and the sky closed behind him and kept him. For decades, that was the whole ending. The man who wrote about a little prince who leaves his body behind in the desert and returns to the stars, he himself just went up one morning and never came down, and nobody could tell you where or why. Now here's where it gets interesting. And this is the part that took more than 50 years to fill in. In 1998, a fisherman off the coast of Marseille, in the south of France, pulled up his net and found a silver identity bracelet tangled in it. On that bracelet were engraved the name Antoine de Saint-Exupéry and the name of his wife and his New York publisher. The sea had held on to it for 54 years and finally handed it back. That set off a search, and a couple of years later, divers found it, the wreckage of a P-38 Lightning, on the seabed off Marseille, broken up and scattered across the bottom. They brought up pieces, they matched the serial numbers on the airframe against the manufacturing records back in the United States, and there it was, the very airplane, his airplane, down in the Mediterranean, the whole time. A few miles off the French coast, he was trying to help liberate. There was no sign of battle damage that anybody could point to for certain. No bullet holes that told the story clean. So the question hung there. Did he get bounced by a German fighter? Did his failing body finally give out at altitude? Did that bad shoulder mean he never saw the one that got him? Did he simply, at the end, in an airplane too fast and too modern for a tired man carrying too much, fly it into the sea the way he'd nearly flown into the desert floor all those years before? Then, a few years after that, an old German fighter pilot named Horst Rippert came forward. He'd flown a Messerschmitt in that area in that period, and he said, "I shot down a Lightning that day, off Marseille, in the right place at the right time," and he said something that stuck with me. He said he'd loved Saint-Exupéry's books as a young man, that he had read him and admired him, and that if he had known who was in that airplane, he never would have fired. He said, "I hoped it wasn't him, and I feared it was." Now historians argue about whether Rippert really got him, because the times and the places don't line up perfectly, and an old man's memory across 60 years is a fragile thing. We may never know for certain. But it's a haunting thought, isn't it? One reader, up in the sky, may be firing on the man who'd written the words he carried in his heart, and neither of them knowing. Let me bring this in for a landing. What I want you to take away from Saint-Exupéry isn't the crashes, though Lord knows he had enough of them. It's what he understood about why we do this. He wrote that the airplane is not an end in itself, is a tool like a plow, and that, by means of the airplane, we leave the cities and their bookkeepers behind and we rediscover the country the shepherd knows. He wrote that a pilot buried in his instruments, working the controls, is actually being given a chance to see the truest face of the earth and the sky, that the machine doesn't isolate a man from the great problems of nature, it plunges him more deeply into them. Every one of you who has ever leveled off at altitude on a clear evening and looked out at the world laid out gold and quiet below you and felt something you couldn't quite put words to, you already know what he knew. He just found the words. He found them out there in a wooden shack on the edge of the Sahara, and in a red airplane broken across a Libyan plateau, and finally, I suppose, somewhere over the blue Mediterranean on a summer morning, when he traded his airplane for good and went on up. The sources on this are his own books, Wind, Sand, and Stars, and Night Flight foremost, along with the wreck recovery work done off Marseille and reported in the years after the bracelet came up in that fisherman's net. Go read the man himself. That's an order. That's the show. You can find us at RadioHangar.com. Next time you're up there alone at altitude and the country opens up beneath you, tip a wing for old Saint X. He'd understand. This is Tail Dragger Blue, side up, friends.